Hello again, everybody. Hi there. Alrighty, we started a bit early. They've closed the doors, so I'm hoping that means you can all get away to the coffee queues a bit quicker than everybody else. Alrighty. So first of all, I wanted to thank you all for coming today. I know you had, there was a different sessions you could have chosen, so thank you for coming to this one. Now, the topic we'll be discussing is business intelligence, and we will be focused on data visualization. So if you've come to the wrong room, because sometimes that happens, I had one person upset because I didn't talk about .NET. If that person is you, there's two exits, so make use of them, okay? I should say, if you've got any questions at any point, just ask me, preferably about business intelligence and data visualization. So that's our subject for today. And I will be covering Power Pivot and Power View. And before I get started, how many people have actually used Power Pivot? Okay, about a third of the audience, about half. Okay. So what I'll do is I'll cover the basics of Power Pivot in order to get everyone the opportunity so they can see it. How many people have looked at Power View? Less hands. Okay. So we'll try and spend more time in Power View then, just because there's not enough and not that many people have seen it yet, which is fair because it's new. All right. So before we do that, I want to try and go through some of the theory around why we are making these changes in SQL Server 2012. There is quite a shift towards the users, and I want to explain why that is. And there's a change in business intelligence generally, and SQL Server is matching those changes. So I believe quite firmly that if you understand why something is correct, it makes you better at the how. So I will be talking about some theory to give you some context. If you don't like theory and just want to see Power View bubbles across the screen, then this session may not be for you. Okay? I just believe telling you about the why makes you better at the how. Okay? So the first thing I want to talk about, excuse me, is the change in business intelligence generally. Then we'll talk Power Pivot and Power View. Now, the thing about business intelligence is it's about people first. It probably sounds simple, but I've seen projects fail in business intelligence. Maybe you have as well, because there can be quite a high failure rate as people select the technology rather than consulting the people first. And if you try to fit technology around people's requirements, if you haven't looked at people's requirements first, then the technology won't catch up. People will blame the technology. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution. Okay. So the technology should always support the business need first. It does sound simple. I did see one data warehouse project fail. It lasted for about 2 years. So it was a long time and a lot of investment. But it was created outside of the requirements of the business users. They didn't understand it. They didn't use it. It was very technically complex, and simply because of that, it failed. So it's really important to get your users on board. And that's really the main focus of the changes in SQL Server 2012. Some things you will always need. You will always need high availability. You will always need mission-critical systems. So these improvements are available in SQL Server 2012. But the ones we'll be focusing on are things that are reflecting the ethos and the changes and the landscape around business intelligence as we try to focus more on users. Now, I do have the references for this particular point available on my blog at jenstirrup.com. And there's a gentleman by the name of Howard Dresner. Has anybody heard of this gentleman? A few hands? Yeah. If you ever use the term business intelligence, Howard Dresner is actually the gentleman who coined that term. So if you have a job in business intelligence, you should be grateful to him, yeah? So, with Howard Gesner every year conducts a study that focuses on the changes in business intelligence. And what he normally does is sends out a questionnaire to thousands of people and crunches loads of statistical analysis on the response. Then he tries to predict the next trends in BI. One of his questions asks people, do you consider business intelligence initiatives in your organisation a success? I've put up four numbers, and what I'd like to know in the audience, which number do you think considered the BI initiatives a success in their organisation? So was it 38%, 52%, 6% or 2.3%? Who's going to choose number A? A few hands, okay, good. Who's going to choose B? Less hands, okay. And number C, 6%? More of the audience, yeah, that's nearly everybody. And who's the really pessimistic people that think 2.3, yeah, I've got a few at the front. Yeah. Now, you'll be surprised to know that 38% of people said that their BI initiatives were a success. Now, that surprised me when I read it. But then I thought about it, and the thing is, it depends what you count as business intelligence. Because if you are a business user, you're chopping and changing in Excel all the place, and you're swapping documents around by email, then of course it's a success because you're happy with your own work. But if you ask an IT person who's got to look after the data, protect the users from themselves, because let's face it, they do get themselves into a bit of a mess sometimes. I spoke to somebody recently who's showed me one of her spreadsheets, and she said, this is a spreadsheet of my spreadsheets. She had loads of them all over the place. So we have to be really careful sometimes because these are not backed up. So IT tend to deliver more traditional business intelligence solutions. They tend to be quite flexible and powerful. Has anybody here heard of the Kimball methodology? Yeah, quite a few people. Yeah. Has anybody here used analysis services cubes? Yeah, okay. In that case, you're actually using Kimball methodology without realising it. So if you talk about your dimensions and your metrics, your measures, your facts, that's actually Kimball terminology. Dimensions are ways of describing data, and metrics are ways of measuring what's happened. So if you have a report which has sales amount by geography, then the sales metric is actually the fact, and whatever comes after the by tends to be the dimension. Sales amount by dimension, by geography, by date, whatever that happens to be. So people tend to implement Kimball and also Inman solutions, which are more traditional. And we like that because it's very secure. We have a lot of control over who accesses the data. I've had to do identical analysis services cubes for the same organisation, but populated with different data. And the reason for that was actually money laundering rules. I was working in Sweden at the time, and we couldn't let one group see the other person's data, and that seemed to be the best way to do it. So we have a lot of control, and there is expertise as well. If you don't sign up currently for Kimball's newspaper, this sort of little email newsletter, I recommend that you do. It's just once a month, and there's always something useful in there about dimensional modelling. You can also deliver these solutions real-time or historically as well. And you have a lot of control, and we all know that control is good. But there are downsides as well to very traditional business intelligence. So we have the problem that it is a hurdle to implement. It can be difficult for IT teams and business users to talk to one another. The reason for that is, and you may have this scenario, I have this a lot, you ask a business user, so what's your requirements? And they say, I don't know what I don't know. And you say, okay, so what would you like to see in your reports? And they say, everything you've got. Does anybody else have this? Yeah, I certainly do. Give me everything, and I want it yesterday, tends to be the answer. But that can be quite difficult because you don't want to show them keys, for example. So, and once the data warehouse or the BI solution is in place, often it can be quite difficult and rigid to change. You've got to go through the whole issue again of identifying requirements. So end users don't like that. They don't want to wait 2 years for you to do a BI solution. They want to go back to Excel quite happily and not speak to people in the IT department or technical people. They want the answers, they want them now. So end user business intelligence is the work that's very difficult for people to measure because you don't actually know what's happening. So the lady who said to me, here's a spreadsheet of my spreadsheets, she was actually doing quite a clever thing of tracking them because a lot of places don't. I've used to work with a financial organisation in the UK and they showed me their spreadsheet, which was based on 6 other spreadsheets. And the thing is that for customer satisfaction in each of their branches, that was showing as 100% for every branch in the UK. And I thought, wow, your customer service must be amazing. And they said, no, the spreadsheet's wrong. One of the spreadsheets that are based on, one of the 6 spreadsheets that are based on this one is wrong somewhere. We don't know where. I said, well, how do you make a business decision on something that's wrong? And she said, well, we have a sort of gut feel. And I think the gut feel is what we're trying to get away from. And the interesting thing with that is that the spreadsheet must have been really broken because even branches that were closed were still reporting 100% customer satisfaction. And people run their whole organisations in spreadsheets that you have no visibility of. So customers and users are happy because they're in control. They collaborate by sending by email. It's flexible because they can go in and change the numbers at any time that they choose. Yeah? And that makes life very difficult for everyone else. It also means they can do mashups. They can mix and match their data. And it all sounds very dangerous to me, and it can be, because you, as the IT person, are probably worrying how you back these spreadsheets up. What happens when, how do you undo the chaos because somebody has not been able to use a VLOOKUP function properly? So SQL Server 2012 is all about trying to find a compromise between the IT departments and the business departments as well. They're trying to keep as many people happy as possible. If you've heard of the philosopher John Stuart Mill, he used to talk about the utilitarian principle, which was maximising the amount of happiness for everybody. And SQL Server 2012 is a real shift because it's really starting to look at users. So when I start to do the demos, I'd like you to have a think about how you can use these new user technologies in your environment and your workplace as well. Yeah. There are downsides, as there always is. There's no panacea. We call this self-service business intelligence. It's not a panacea. I think the idea is that users can create their own reports without contacting IT departments. But that can be difficult as well, because not everybody has access to the data sources that they need. And it doesn't mean they're necessarily creating the reports properly. So be careful of these things. Not everything is a cure-all. So one criticism I often hear of Microsoft is that they have a lot of reporting tools and people get confused about which one to use. I've been working at the SQL Server booths the last few days and I've had lots of questions around this. When do I use Performance Point? When do I use Reporting Services, Excel? Or are there other tools that I'm not familiar with? I think there's a grain of truth in that criticism. People do get confused. So, for example, you can produce KPIs, key performance indicators, and analysis services. You can do it in Excel and Performance Point, and you can also get reporting services to do it. And I think people get a bit confused. So I'm going to try and explain some of the differences of the technologies, when they're best used, but I'll mainly be focusing on PowerPivot and PowerView. We'll talk a little bit about reporting services at the end. Okay, so PowerPivot, does anybody here use reporting services? Yep, most of the room. Personally, I love reporting services, I really do. You have a lot of control over it, and it's mainly aimed at developers, which is good. Now, the thing is that it's not aimed at business users. I've tried to train people like accountants and lawyers, very clever people, but they can't grasp reporting services because there are a lot of different properties and there are some quirks around the software in order to get it done. If anybody has ever struggled trying to get things to stay within the margin without popping over to the next page when you're exporting to PDF, then you know that you've probably spent a long time trying to get that to work. So PowerPivot is a step away from reporting services. It's mainly for your data analyst, for your business user who understands relationships and understands data. So they tend to sit in the business departments, but they do have a good understanding of certain IT principles as well. And then at the end of the scale, we have PowerView. PowerView does not require any typing at all to create a report. Yeah, it's super easy. It's all about click and tick, drag and drop. The only typing they do is to type a title and also to type in the name of the file when they save it. Super simple. We will focus in PowerPivot first of all. Now PowerPivot, if you say to a business user, I can get you 75 million rows in Excel, they will love you for it. So if you're not using it in your organisation just now, have a look at it. Show people that you can stuff all these rows into Excel. Now underlying PowerPivot is actually a small analysis services cube. That's why it's so fast. Now the technology underlying it was called VertiPack because that's the name of the company that Microsoft purchased in order to deliver the solution. It's now called X-Velocity. So if you hear people talking about VertiPack and X-Velocity, it's the same thing. The marketing material probably hasn't caught up yet, which means you might still see VertiPack, but it's the same thing. Okay. So you get two versions of PowerPivot. One is a free Excel download. I recommend you just download and install it. If it doesn't appear to have installed in Excel, all you need to do is make sure you go to File, Options, Add-ins, and it's under the COM Add-ins. I can show you that. You also get SharePoint version as well. It does everything the Excel version does, but what it does do is give you control over the PowerPivot. For example, you're responsible for the data refresh that occurs in that PowerPivot. That's something that you can look after. You can also control the formula as well, and that makes things much simpler from the IT department because it's traceability, it's data lineage. So it's not a case that you've got 20 Excel spreadsheets all with different formula. If you put them closer to the source in PowerPivot, it makes your life easier because you know that every time somebody uses that number, you're going to get the same result. And I don't know about you, but it's extremely frustrating and disappointing for a business user to look at reports and they've all got this different data when they're supposed to be showing the same thing. Does anyone else have this sometimes? Yeah. It's very difficult. And the customer and the users lose faith in the data because they get a different response every time. So why PowerPivot? It allows you to do mashups. In analysis services, it's quite difficult in the multidimensional model to mash up data together. It tends to basically be on SQL Server. But PowerPivot allows you to have lots of data sources together. So you can use OData feeds, you can use Teradata, Oracle, Sybase, all these different connectors. Lots of opportunity there for you. It's better than VLOOKUP, and if you tell that to a business user, they usually like that. Yeah, because they do like the VLOOKUPs, it's faster. Yeah. Now, there's a lot of time intelligence available in PowerPivot. The example I want to give you is where the time intelligence in PowerPivot wasn't matching the user requirements. Okay. So before I move on to the demo, are there any questions about PowerPivot? Anything at the moment? Okay, that's fine. Right. night. So PowerPivot is embedded in Excel. And I want to show you the final result first. It's just a very small table. And then I will show you the underlying DAX formula and the PowerPivot that got us to this stage here. Okay? So it's quite a simple example. Now, I am probably, as you may have noticed, I am quite small. So these people over here are probably not going to be able to see me over the monitor, okay? Which means I can't see you either. So if these people here could look after these people here, that'd be good. If any of them are waving with a question, let me know, all right? Okay. So this is Excel, obviously, 2010. So what I've done is I've used good old AdventureWorks. If you need a demo data set, look at AdventureWorks. Or what you can do is go to, for example, the Guardian data blog. They have all sorts of wonderful data. Yeah. So did anybody here come to the BI Power Hour yesterday? Yeah, quite a few people? Yeah. That was a lot of fun. And the data we looked at there was Jedi Knights and their prevalence in the UK. And that data, I got some of it from the Guardian data store. It does have serious data as well, not just fun. So on the left-hand side, what I have here is an Excel slicer. And what that allows me to do is to filter the data. And the data is showing basically the last 13 months. And then it's splitting the data up between the last 13 to 26 months. And then finally, data that's not relevant. The customer that had this example was an insurance firm, and they wanted to measure 13-month periods, not 12-month periods. If you've used analysis services, you know that it has a function called parallel period, which gives you a comparison between this year and last year, this quarter and last quarter, but they're very default time intelligence features. Whereas PowerPivot allows you to be a bit more flexible than that. What I'll do is I'll take you through the interface first, and then we'll start to look at how I created that small example. So this is the very latest version of PowerPivot. So those of you that have used PowerPivot version 1, you might see some differences, and I'll point those as you go along. Now, this is one feature which I love in PowerPivot because business users get it. It's a very small diagram view, and if you go down to the bottom right-hand side, what you see there is just a very small icon down here, and that allows us to actually go into the diagram view. Now, remember, PowerPivot's aimed at your business analysts, your users, so we're trying to help them to understand the data as much as we can. So now I'll go to the data view. As I said earlier, there are plenty of data sources for you to use in doing mashups. Obviously, you can take from SQL Server, Access, or Analysis Services. You can take from Reporting Services, Reports. So if you already have reports in place, you can use those as a source. You can also take data from the Azure Data Market. What that is, has anybody used the Azure Data Market? No. A few people? Yeah. Only a handful. Very briefly, the Azure Data Market is a source of data where you can go and rent it from Microsoft, basically. So if you are a property developer, you might want data about crime or weather in a particular region. So if you were to collect weather data as a small business, it might be an issue for you because you would need to have servers for SSIS jobs. You need to collect the data, sanitize it, integrate it, whereas Microsoft already have a lot of weather data and crime data for you to look at, and that's in the Azure Data Market. So if you haven't had a look at it, it might be worthwhile, just for data sources that might augment your business data. You can also take from data feeds as well. It will take from Atom feeds. And one interesting example is you can use Access in SharePoint. And what you can do is create an Access form in SharePoint. The users can actually go in, type in their information, and that gets stored behind the scenes in a PowerPivot. And the way it does that is it publishes an Atom feed, and the PowerPivot can pick it up and refresh it. So that's something that can be useful. And the reason I've implemented that before was target data. I had the actual information, but I needed the target data to produce key performance indicators. So that's something to think about as well. Okay. So we also have a design tab here, and I'm looking for the dates dimension. Now, you can actually get a dates dimension from the Azure Data Market as well. So I don't know if you've noticed this, but in AdventureWorks in 2008, release 2, you download it from Codeplex, but some of the dates are missing. There's a whole 10 months in the year 2009 which are actually missing. I don't know why. I've never understood it. Maybe it was a bad year for someone at Microsoft. They decided to just forget the whole thing. I don't know. But if you have a date table, then that allows you to do sophisticated time intelligence normally. But the problem with this is that, I don't know about you, but when I'm building a data warehouse or a source of data, I tend to have a date in a smart integer format, which follows the Kimball methodology. So I've got YYYY, MMDD, for example, is my date. And the reason I do that is it's an integer, so it's easier, faster for searching, for indexing. With the release of SQL Server 2008, they released a date format, not date time, just date. And people started to use that for data warehousing, and I understand why, because it took up 3 bits. So if you have a very, very large data source, then it might save you some space to do that. But I've only seen that in that particular example. So then when I looked at Power Pivot, I noticed that they actually expect the date keys to be in date time format. So for me, coming from that background, it was a bit unusual. But I realise now that it is user oriented and the users will understand date time format better. So that's why it is there. So it took a little while for me to think about it. And you can mark it as a date table, and you do that. Simply marking it as a date table will open up the time intelligence for you. Okay. Now, we need to create relationships in the data. And when you start to look at the relationships in the data, when Power Pivot imports some data, I'm not going to import data now. I think it's one of the most boring things I can ask an audience to ever do. It's short of being PowerPointed to death, which I don't believe in doing either. So if you manage the relationships, Power Pivot will try and match the relationships for you. It may not always get it right, so I recommend you always have a review of it anyway. Certainly, I would double check. And the way to do that is quite simple. It's we have a managed relationships dialog box, and if we click on one, it's a very simple lookup relationship between the tables. I think Alberto Ferrari is doing a session on many-to-many. I think it might be later today. So if you get an opportunity to look at it. Oh, was it first one today? All right, okay. Yeah. And Alberto and Marco's sessions are always really good. I always suggest people to look at them. If you didn't catch it, you should be able to get the videos online from Channel 9. They've started to release the videos now, so. Okay. So we have the advanced tab as well. And we have perspectives. Now remember that the perspectives are just simply, they're not a replacement for security, okay? What they are very, very simply a way of hiding columns from people, yeah? Because you may not want all of your business users to see the columns, so it's not really hiding the data. If they log in as someone else, they can see it. You should probably try and secure the data before it gets to the Power Pivot. So that's a new feature as well. Now, one thing to notice is that in the Power Pivot, you cannot change the data, yeah? So, and that's really to counteract what happens with business users when they actually try and change the data, because that's what they'll try and do, and you're not allowing them to, because you've got the control over it. And I think that's quite a big benefit, because it means people can't go in and change numbers all over the place, and they will probably try. The way that Power Pivot works is you have that control. By not changing it, it means you have consistent data across the enterprise. So back to our example. Got a facts table here, fact into net sales. Now the language, the language that PowerPivot uses is called DAX, Data Access Expressions. It's not as difficult to learn as MDX. And MDX can be difficult to learn. If you've used analysis services and tried to use MDX, it's not always easy, and it's certainly not easy for business users to pick up and understand. It can be quite difficult to test as well, because you have to try and match the MDX with the SQL query and match both results. So it can be quite difficult. So DAX is really very close to the Excel functions. It's as simple or as difficult as you can make it. It's not a replacement for MDX. You can use both for different requirements. So in order to implement this really simple solution, what I did do is try and give every month a sequence number. So basically the top 13 numbers, the highest 13 numbers, gave me the identification to stripe the data so I could see that data belongs to the set of the high, of the 13-month set. And then the next, the highest 13 to 26 integers in the sequence, I could actually give them a label that says that they were within the last 13 to 26 months, and that allowed me to stripe that data. So essentially it was really simple for people to use and select the labels. Now the way I did it was using DAX and using calculated columns. We'll go back to the PowerPivot. Now calculated columns, you can use DAX to create those and to amend existing columns, so it adds a richness to your data. Now the thing with calculated columns is that they will take more space. In earlier versions of PowerPivot, if you added something with a lot of characters in it, a varchar, then it could add a lot of space or a lot of disk space onto your PowerPivot. Yeah. So just be careful of that. Because in SharePoint, you have to be careful when you're uploading files that are quite large. Make sure it's got all of the data in it. And if you want to cut something out, then looking for these varchars are good ways to do it. Because if you've ever tried to deal with analysis services, you know that strings take up a lot of space and they're quite difficult to search. They impact performance as well. Well, it's the same with PowerPivot as well. So, you know, so we'll see how we go. So essentially, the first thing I did was give every month a sequence number. And this is the DAX that allowed me to do that. So the interesting thing with the particular situation I had was the facts table normally just contains data up to this point of time. It does not contain any future data. It's giving you the facts about what's happened. But because this was a facts table which contained future data as well, then that gave me an issue because I had to make sure and not include the future data when calculating my months. So essentially, I wanted to just collect the highest 13 numbers, and that gave me the opportunity to stripe the data just to filter out those any other data that wasn't available at that time. So the first part of the DAX statement is actually looking for data which has not occurred at this point in time. We're trying to exclude future data. So anything that happens between now and the future gets marked with a zero. It doesn't get included in the sequence. Okay. So then what I do is I look for the current year. And you can see this minx statement here, which is just in the middle. And that what that does is it looks for the minimum date in the data warehouse and then starts that with a zero and then just increments it. Yeah. So the highest 13 months will give us the information just to filter out the rest of the data which occurs before that time. So here we have a very simple DAX statement here. And what this does is it's looking to try and identify the top 13 months. Yeah. and the top 30, the highest number, 13 months, and then it just shows you that information and it labels it as being the last 13 to 26 months or whatever it happens to be. I'm just trying to assign a label to the data dependent on the number. Did the same for the last 24 months as well. And then if you want to put it into Excel, you're just essentially creating a pivot table. And the way that you do that is you go to Power Pivot, and then you'll get an option that will allow you to insert a pivot table. Okay. There we go. So when you start to look at Excel, you can see when you install Power Pivot, you get some new features which are involved. It allows you to create new measures in the Excel spreadsheet based on the information available in the Power Pivot. And also, it doesn't allow you to change the data. So if you click on it to try and change it, it will say cannot change part of a pivot table. So again, that's us trying to get around the idea of us trying to not allow the users to change the data in any way. So you've got consistency. Okay. So what I'll do now is I'll go back to my slides with a quick summary, and then we'll look at Power View. Okay. Okay, so what did we learn from this demo? Just a very brief overview of Power Pivot. I'm hoping that it will try to encourage the people that have not used it to go away and have a look at it. You can see how to enforce business rules quite simply using DAX. And what you can do is try and make sure you can publish it to SharePoint as well, so you can share the information that's available to you. Okay. So now we're going to look at Power View. The Power View I'm going to create is based on the Power Pivot that we've just created at this point in time. Yeah. So it's really about data representation. Now the thing with Power View is, to give you some context, when we talk about Excel and reporting services, we have a very defined question with a very defined answer. Those are called our business puzzles. Yeah, so it's quite a straightforward question. You might want to know something like, how many sales did I make in the last year? So a very well-defined question with a very well-defined answer. Now, the thing with Power View is it's aimed at the people who have an ill-defined question. They don't have a well-defined question or a well-defined answer. Yeah. So what they have instead is these are the people that will say things like, I don't know what data you've got. I don't know my requirements until I know what you have. You know? So it's really aimed more at those people. And that's your mysteries, your business mysteries, as opposed to your business puzzles. It's for the people, they don't really have a set of defined reports. What they have instead is a lot of business questions. And they don't even know what the business questions are always until they've been through it and looked at the data. So it's more analytical. They are not starting with any particular premise in mind or any particular theory. So what you can do is, these people often get quite dissatisfied with Excel and reporting services, because what they might want to do is they will ask for a reporting services report which has maybe 20 parameters in it. And the reason they're asking for all these parameters is they're trying to slice and dice all of the data. But if you've dealt with reporting services and you've tried to put that many parameters into a reporting services report, you must know probably it will be on its knees trying to give you that information. It will be hard for it to do it. And the situation becomes even worse if the stored procedures behind it are messy, or even worse, they've put all the SQL actually inside the report, so nobody knows what's happening and nobody wants to look at it either. But Power View is not about that. It's about the people who don't know what they don't know. Yeah. So it's interactive data exploration. And what you find is, when I'm using Power View, I'll do something and then I'll think, I like what I did 5 ticks ago. So I have to go back and undo it, because you're so fast creating the Power View. Yeah. So a bit about the architecture. At this moment in time, Power View is only available in SharePoint Enterprise. Yeah. So for those of you that don't have it, I'm sorry, that's just the way that it's structured. There's a dependency in the data source that it uses at this moment. It's actually an add-in for reporting services. When you see PowerView, you'll probably be really surprised that it's built in reporting services, which it is, and I'll show you that. So it's also only available in SQL Server 2012, and the version of SharePoint is SharePoint 2010 with Service Pack 1. Yeah. So just in case you're thinking about using it. To give you some context about data visualization, because sometimes I think people are expecting PowerView to be a reporting tool, but it's more subtle than that. It's more a data visualization tool. It's quite a simple interface, and the reason for that is coming back to what I said earlier about John Stuart Mill, making the most people happy, the most happiness is possible. So when you're actually looking at reports, as human beings, we have very specific ways of viewing the world. So the first thing we do is we have something called pre-attentive processing. And what happens is that's very early on in visual processing, and you have, basically you see the visual field, you see it in 2D, you see it as lines, colours, shapes, and motion and form. You haven't put anything together. It happens very early and it lasts nanoseconds. Yeah. They've done a lot of psychological theories and studies which show that information to be available to do studies. The second part of visual processing is called visual integration. So instead of seeing lines and forms, what you do is you start to see things being put together. Yeah. You start to see, well, that's not just a line or a shape, it's actually a person. And you recognise faces very early in this process, for example. So it's about trying to put things together. So it's still bottom up at this point. And the third stage is cognitive integration, where it's more top down. And what you're trying to do there is you're using your context and your world knowledge to try and understand the scene before you. And it can be quite easy to fool the visual field, visual processing. We can distort it quite easily. I don't know if you have this in various parts of Europe. We have it in the UK, where they have a television programme which shows you movie mistakes. And basically they get, during the editing process, when you're watching a film, you don't realise the very obvious mistakes that they have. For example, some of the Harry Potter films recently show Harry Potter wearing a different T-shirt within seconds, so it will go to Harry Potter, go back to the red-haired boy, his name escapes me for a minute, then go back to Harry Potter again, he's got a different top on. Yeah. So if you watch Alice in Wonderland, it's the same a little bit. Alice falls down the rabbit hole, she's got high heels on, the next few seconds she's got flat shoes on, then she's got a necklace on, and then she doesn't, and it's the editing process. But you don't notice these things, because there's so much else happening in the visual scene that you're actually not paying attention to the details. And the same happens with reports as well. We have to try and make them as simple as possible so we don't distract people with lots of jingly-jangly things. Okay. So a quick summary of pre-attentive attributes. We tend to look at things in terms of the spatial position. So if we tend to assume, and of visual processing, things higher up are greater in value, and things that slope to the right are also greater in value as well. So we also tend to assume that longer lines have greater value as well, higher numbers representing. We also assume as well that we have brighter colours and more intense colours have got higher values than something that's lighter in colour. So when we take these theories and we extrapolate from that to how we look at charts, we can see that the line charts, the bar charts, and the scatter charts, although they're very simple, actually match quite well in order to augment our visual processing. Yeah. So the line chart makes use of our visual processing of spatial position, and the bar chart makes use of our assumption that longer lines are greater in value. It's very quick for people to assess that, so it's very clear for them to understand. So I'm just going to move into a demo of PowerView now. Are there any questions before I go on? No? Okay. Now, PowerView is actually in SharePoint, and I've stored these in a very specific type of shared documents library, which is called a PowerView gallery, which we have here. So this is the PowerView, which I had earlier. I uploaded it into SharePoint for you, just because you would fall asleep by the time it uploaded. I don't want to take up your time like that. So that's the PowerPivot there. Now, PowerPivot is a source for PowerView, lots of powers. I will talk about PowerPoint soon as well. So it also uses tabular models as a data source as well. I'm not going to talk about tabular models in this session, but if you haven't looked at them, I recommend you do. They're easier to implement than analysis services cubes, and you might really, I'm starting to really like them. They're quite powerful. So on the right-hand side, I don't know if you can see over here, on the right-hand side, we've got three little buttons on our PowerPivot. So what we have is Excel Workbook. So we could create an Excel Workbook based on that PowerPivot. And that would mean that you could save the Excel Workbook back to SharePoint, and it means everybody has shared the information, they have access to it, and also not really able to change it very much. You could exert control over it. And then we have PowerView as well, which is the funny little box in the middle. So if I want to create a power view in this one, I just click on it. And what happens is, when the blue circle stops, it will actually be based strictly on the power pivot that we've looked at. While that's taking some time, I'll just find you an example which I did earlier. All right, here we are, good, okay. So I'll take you through the interface, first of all. So what we have in the right-hand side are all of the dimensions and the metrics. Let's see if you can see that. That's the dimensions and the metrics that are based in our power pivot. We don't here have the ability to create new measures or anything. It's no typing. So it's based strictly on the source that it's been given. Yeah. The idea being that you, as a business intelligence developer, have actually created that data source for them as much as possible. Okay. So say, for example, we go to Dim Geography. You can see it's just a drop-down list. I'm going to choose English Country Region. And when I tick the box, what we have here is all of the countries and adventure works will appear there. And I'm going to pick a fact as well. So you notice that some of the tables in the right-hand side are actually greyed out. I'm just going to click in and show you that, in case you can't see it. The reason that they're greyed out is those tables are not related to one another in the power pivot. So if you choose something, it will only show you the tables that are related to what you've shown. So if you're the business user, you don't want to have to necessarily worry about setting up relationships in the data. That's been done in the PowerPivot for you. So that's one reason I'm encouraging you to look at PowerPivot, because if business users see PowerView, they'll love it. And you'll have to know PowerPivot in order to give them PowerView. Yeah. So if we use Facts Internet Sales, I'm just going to use Sales Amount. And you just tick it again. That's all you do. You see the fields here at the bottom right-hand side. And that basically gives you all of the fields that are in the table. And I think that's really, although this is built on reporting services, that's where the similarity ends. Because if you use the Business Intelligence Development Studio, you know that the properties are over the right-hand side and the shared data sources. And that's really it. You would never guess it was on reporting services. I'm going to make this bigger. And what we see here is you have a number of visualizations available to you. Now, I explained earlier that some of the visualizations are quite simple because they best match the data visualization principles, the way that we manage and understand the data and the visualization in front of us according to the way our visual systems work. So we have column charts, bar charts, and scatter charts, which were the three that I covered earlier. Now, can anybody guess, and I know that one person knows in the audience, what visualization is missing from this list? Yeah, it's a pie chart. Thank you, sir. It's a pie chart. Pie chart's missing. Okay, there are upsides and downsides to pie charts. Okay. So the thing with pie charts is that people don't always read area very well, and they don't always read angles very well. Okay. So I have held presentations at SQL Bits, for example, in the UK, and I've sat down the SQL Server audience, the DBAs. They're into SQL Server, so that means they're obviously smart, clever people. And I've shown them a pie chart, very simple pie chart, which has got three slices on it. And I pick one of the slices and I say, what percentage of the pie is that slice? And the answers I get for this particular slice is anything from 16% to 55%. Now, these are switched on SQL Server people, and they're giving me a huge range of information about this particular slice. And then I'll say to people, well, the answer is actually 40. It's 40%. And then you feel almost a palpable intake of breath because so many people have got it wrong. And I say, well, that's the point I'm trying to make with a pie chart, is people don't always read them very well. You'll notice that when I talked about visual processing earlier, I didn't say that people read area very well or that they read angles very well. Pie charts and gauges have got both, so they're quite easy and open to misinterpretation. And my guess is that although pie charts are missing, even though there are problems with people overusing them and misusing pie charts, that pie charts, you don't know if they'll make an appearance in PowerView or not. I guess my guess is that there will be such a huge customer demand for pie charts that they'll have to put it back in eventually. We'll see what happens. It's just speculation, some futurology. Pie charts are very good if you only want to show one dimension and you don't mind taking up a lot of space just to answer one business question. I wouldn't use them if you have any more than five slices. They are very difficult for people to try and compare. And the thing with line charts and bar charts is they facilitate comparison very well. Whereas the pie chart, people find it easier to start at 12 o'clock with the slices to understand what they are. But the minute you start to move away from 12 o'clock, people start to find it more difficult to compare. I don't know if anybody remembers, a few years ago Kylie Minogue did a song called Can't Get You Out of My Head, and she does this. Yeah. People usually remember the video. She's quite an interesting outfit on. So, but when I show people a pie chart, they start to do this as well. You start to see people doing to the side because they can't. They're trying to compare and they're trying to move to the side in order to turn the slice up to 12 o'clock to make it easier for them to read. Now, I said data visualization is all about trying to keep people happy, as happy as possible, and they can't be happy if they're not comfortable in their seats. So I'm going to choose a bar chart here. So this is just simply showing the facts data for the sales amount by country. And if I want to sort it, then we can sort by sales amount and we can do ascending. I'm just going to zoom in so you can see that. Yeah. So you get a very small title, which is sales amount descending. I talked earlier about trying to facilitate comparison. What happens is people like to see summaries of data, then they like to zoom and filter, then they like to see the detail of the data as well. So in order to allow people to compare properly, you can start to allow them to summarise very quickly by sorting it. It really helps people to understand it quite well. So what we can do is we can make the charts talk to one another. So we can add in, if I click away from that, if I do sales amount, and then we do products as well, we can simply overlay the charts on top of each other. So I'm going to choose product category and English product category. Very easy to swap them around. So what I have here is a very small table, which shows you the amount of accessories and bikes and clothing that were sold. So now if I change that to be a column chart, so what we can do is start to swap the data around a little bit. I'm going to sort that so it's actually sorting by sales amount and descending. And if I decrease this one, Just grab the handle. I'm going to make this one a bit bigger. So it gives me space for this little chat here. If I can grab the handle. Yep, that's it. Now it's disappeared, but what I can do is I can bring it forward. Yeah, and we can see it. Now because we've put that chart on top of each other, we can start to see that they filter quite well. Now we haven't done anything very special. All I've done is put one chart on top of the other, which means they talk to one another. And what we can start to do is we can make this data a bit more interesting for people. We can add in an extra measure as well, for example. So if I add in product cost, so it allows you just to change the items very quickly. So we can start to see Australia. Click on that. It gives us the information that they've sold. If I add product cost over here as well, then it should filter here. So I've got United States, and it tells me what proportion was product cost and product sales for United States. And if I want to do it for Germany, then I can. So it allows you to visually interact with the data. I haven't had to use any parameters to do it. And what I will do is duplicate the view to show us a bit more information. Oh, hello there.
If you click on bikes, does it work the other way around, is it?
And I'll just repeat the question.
Yeah, if you click on bikes, does it look at any other chart?
Let's have a look. I'm just going to repeat the question, sorry, for everyone. Thank you. Right, what we'll do is we'll see if we click on bikes, if it works the other way around. So click on bikes. Yeah, it does seem to, doesn't it? So accessories. Maybe not clicking on it very well. Yep, oh yes, there we go. Yep. So the idea being that the different dimensions, it allows you to filter by dimensions. I'm going to skip that. What we can do is filter these as well. So we could just use an actual filter, which appears at the right-hand side. And when you look at sales amount, what you get is a really nice visualization where it just gives you the sales amounts that were less than a particular amount. So people tend to like sliders. So what's nice is you can filter by a dimension or also by a metric as well. Yeah, people like sliders, which is fine. So I'm going to change this one. I'm just going to remove it and we'll try for a motion chart. So the motion chart works. We've got a scatter chart here. So all I do is click on it. Now what I want to do is make the data move. It's called a motion chart. And motion is one of the very early visual cues, and we're trying to use that in order to understand the chart, to make it as easy to understand as possible. So the x-axis is the sales amount. The y-axis is product cost. So what I'm going to do is use sales amount, and I'm going to drag it so that the size, okay, so the size actually matches the sales amount. Yeah, so the idea being that we're assuming that the larger items are higher in value. Yeah. Now, in order to make this data move, we have to add in a play axis at the bottom. And the play axis tends to be a time dimension. And that's why it's so important to mark a dates table in PowerPivot, so you can actually use these sort of motion charts. So I'm just going to use the calendar year. It's going to update. And when that happens, I'm just going to remove that view for a minute. So when that happens, we can actually see the data move. And there's a very small play button down here, which we press. And the idea is that it gives you some idea of the movement of the data over time. So when it first starts to appear, you see there's a lot of data for bikes, but over time clothing and accessories start to appear. They disappear because the data is not available. And then at some point towards the end of 2006, AdventureWorks started to sell clothing and accessories, and that's why the data started to appear at that time. You can make it a bit more interesting as well. I've used product category name. We could use geography, and all you do is drag and drop it away. So it doesn't actually take very much typing at all to do this. And you can imagine probably what business users find, what fun they would have with it. So if I change that to details, and we can play that, I'll put it back to full screen again, which is here. What you can do is filter the data. So for example, if I click on the United Kingdom and press play, it allows me just to see that particular data by filtering the others. That technique is known as brushing the data. And the reason that we do that is we're using colour again. Colour was one of the very early visual processing cues. The brighter the colour, they assumed it was a greater value. But we can also use it to draw attention to what we actually want to see. So the last thing that you can do with PowerView is you can export it to PowerPoint. I'm just going to make sure we can see all the data. And then I'm going to export to PowerPoint. It's going to ask me to save first. So I'll save the current report, and it always gets saved to SharePoint. So you'll see it gets saved to a PowerView gallery, PowerPivot gallery. So we'll call this TechEd Europe 206. It will save a preview of that in SharePoint, which is really nice because it means users can find it more easily. So if we do File, Export to PowerPoint. It'll take a little minute to do that. The export's complete, and I'm going to save it. TechEd Test Europe. Oops. Okay. I'm just going to copy the directory that's storing the file. It will export it. And then I will look for the PowerPoint and show you how that works. Now, it doesn't do anything until you view the slideshow from the beginning. Oops, yep, there we go. So when we click to interact, see, we go to the next one. Click to interact. What we can do then is start to play the data. And you can imagine how nice it would be for some of your business users to take that PowerPoint and share their findings and their research and their data with other people in the business. And I think that's what PowerView gives you. It gives you the facility for people to create these sort of visualizations very quickly. And this will now play even though it's in PowerPoint. Yeah? And still interact with it in the same way. So here we've got Australia. You can see the trend line. And then it works over time. So I'm just going to escape out of that. And what, are there any questions before I move on to reporting services? Yep, hello there. The PowerPoint is offline available. I need to find out for you if that's okay. I'm sorry, I've just got it on this particular virtual machine that works here. I'll find out for you though, thank you. Yep. I'm just going to repeat the question, if that's okay. The question was, do we support dimensional models as a basis for PowerView? You mean multidimensional models? Not at this moment. So if you have an analysis services cube, what you can do is import it to the tabular model or a PowerPivot, and then that will allow you to have the data in PowerView. At this moment in time, it's actually just the tabular model and PowerPivot. What we could do is open a Kinect case. So if you go to kinect.microsoft.com, you can actually open up a Kinect case to say that you require multi-dimensional support for PowerView. Personally, I think that's a great idea because people spend a lot of time building their multi-dimensional cubes, and I think that would sit really nicely in PowerView. So I've got a question at the back. Hello there. Will it change with the online data? I would need to try that. I'm going to repeat the question. The question was, if the person changes the data behind the scene, will the PowerPoint update as well? I would guess it probably would, but I'd like to try it first before I confirm. I'm not sure. I'm sorry. I don't know. I can find out and come back to you if that's okay. I'll put it in my blog at jenstrout.com. Yeah. I don't want to say yes, it does, if I'm not sure. I'm not checked. Thank you. Hello there. It's just a URL. So if we go back to SharePoint, I'm just going to repeat the question. The question was, how does it, what happens if you publish the PowerView somewhere? So what you can do is, you can see here in 206, it's this one. It actually gets saved, and you can see the URL up here. So I'm not a .NET programmer, I'm not a SharePoint designer programmer, but so you could try certainly, because that's just a URL then, and see how it works. Or what you could do is try and export it to PowerPoint and do it that way. There might be different ways of doing it. And what you could do is, at the SQL Server booth, so if you come and see us later, I'll try and sort of ask somebody who's maybe tried that. Okay. Thank you. So any more questions before I move on? Hello there. I'm sorry, I didn't catch it. I'm sorry, I still didn't catch that. I'm sorry. Hello there.
How much data?
A limit to the data volume for PowerPivot. At the moment, as I understand, the data limit for PowerPivot is 2 gig. And the reason for that is SharePoint. SharePoint has got a 2 gig file limit on it. I need to double check if that has been lifted in Service Pack 1 for SharePoint. I need to find out. So I'm sorry, I don't know the definitive answer, but in previous versions of SharePoint, it was a limit of 2 gig. And the reason for that was a SharePoint limit rather than a PowerPivot limit. Yeah. So I'm just going to quickly show you Visual Studio and talk a little bit about reporting services. Has anybody used the SQL Server data tools yet? A few people, yeah. If you've used Business Intelligence and Designer BIDS in 2008, release 2, then what you'll notice straight away is that the reporting services is now in the data tools, which is much closer to Visual Studio, it's much more closely integrated to that shell. So if you start to run scripts in SQL Server 2012, the same thing happens. Now, the biggest change really is this. What you have now is a SQL Azure data source. So what you can do is use reporting services in Azure in the cloud and then publish that report using the cloud. One way that I've used it is actually to mobilize the report. It doesn't work 100% perfectly. For example, you can't export. I tried it on an iPad and it seemed okay. So it's something to think about if you are thinking, well, what does Azure give me? And the thing is basically when you publish the report to Azure, it's a URL. You have a login splash screen. So just go and try it and have a think about it. And if you try it just now, and it's still being developed on, I think it's not the actual actual release. But if you use a shared data set in 2012 and try to publish that report to SQL Server Azure, it doesn't work very well. It's because the XML is different. It's looking for a local data set instead. But that's the only issue that I've personally found with it. So then it's quite straightforward just to not have things as a shared data set. It's a bit of a pity, but it's worth trying. I also think that the visualizations, you're better off having something that's very simple. The reason for that is not just reporting services, but simply if you're trying to display that on a mobile screen, then you don't want to be trying to cram a lot of data into a small mobile screen. What you want to do is make it as clean as possible and as quick to download as possible too. Yeah, because nothing puts users off more than a slow report. They absolutely hate it, and I assume that most people here have had their ears bent by a business user at some point explaining that their reports are slow. So that's a big change. They've also improved some of the functionality around exporting to sub-reports, exporting to Excel. But it's quite simple, really. If you hear people talking about SQL Server data tools, then just think of Business Intelligence Development Studio. It's very similar. Everything's at the right-hand side. So we've got our data sources, data sets, and our files. And our properties are down the bottom at the right-hand side, where we'd normally expect. Yeah. The deployment method is also the same as well. So if you want to deploy a report to Azure, it's simply a URL. And there it is there. The URL that I've got there is actually pointing to my Azure Reporting Services server. But what you can do is it's exactly the same as you would do for an on-premise reporting services server as well, which is also a URL. So there's no real change. Yeah. The only thing I would point out is that you can't use Windows authentication. It's got to be SQL Server authentication. You've got to use your Windows Live ID or a user associated with it. Yeah. So that's the only downside, I think. So I will go quickly back to my slides. So what did we take away from the PowerView demo? That it's very, very quick to create reports very, very easily. Yeah. It's just click and tick. If everything's in place for the business user, then it'll be quite simple and straightforward for them. Yeah. Okay. Supporting services, we've talked a bit about. If you use SharePoint integrated mode, it is much more integrated. So the report server config file, the configuration is actually done through SharePoint, and the logs are now stored in a SharePoint Hive. They're no longer stored separately anymore. Yeah. So the content databases are part of SharePoint now, not reporting services. Okay. So another difference is the way in which the report runs. It runs page by page, so it will go and get the data, render the page, go and get the data, render the page. Because what it used to do in previous versions is go and get the data all at once. PowerView does the same thing. It's to try and make it more efficient. Yeah. Okay. So reporting services, we've been through that demo. So a quick summary. Self-service business intelligence is the way forward, but there are pitfalls. They have to have cleansed, sanitized, integrated data in the first instance. We talked about Power Pivot. If you haven't used it before, I recommend you go away and have a look at it. I've tried to show you the source of Power Pivot and then the target, how it looks in PowerView, so you can see end to end. Reporting services we touched on. And finally, just to say thank you very, very much for attending today. And I hope you enjoyed the session, and it was nice to meet you all. I'll be around the rest of the day and also tomorrow, and I look forward to meeting you and getting to know you a bit better. So thank you all for coming, and I'm around for questions. Thank you.